Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. I'm doing the producing tonight, and it's a little crazy, but we're going to start with a song here momentarily.
Are we really?
It's time to get things started.
I'm motivational, inspirational, celebrational, motivational. This is what we call the Muppet Show.
And yes, we're going to be talking about the Muppet Show tonight. First, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Rachel. Say hello, my dear.
Hello, my dear.
And we have Adam Ferenz from the Cathode Ray Mission with us. Say hello, Adam.
Hello, Adam.
Oh, it's Adam.
Of course
you
were
going to.
So, the Muppets were a part of my growing up and that. I remember seeing Rolf on the Jimmy Dean Show during the mid-60s. Now they started out locally doing a advertisements for Wilkins Coffee, but you could always see that Jim Henson was a little off-center, let's just say. And even though we're talking about children's programming, quote, even when we get into Sesame Street, there was always something subversive about him and something. And the other thing I want to do before we start is I want to dedicate this show to a friend of mine who actually worked with Jim Henson. I tried to get him on the show, but unfortunately, very recently he had a heart attack and he's in recovery, so he wasn't able to come on. But this show is dedicated to Ed Medina, and so I wanted to do that. So guys, I guess the first question is, we'll go with you, Rachel. How were you introduced to the Muppets?
Okay, so as we know, I'm considerably younger than a lot of our network's podcasters. So I never got to see The Muppet Show when it was actually on air. And, I mean, it had, like, 5 or 6 seasons. I mean, the thing is amazing. I got to actually be introduced to The Muppets through my mother, who was alive and sapient at the time that The Muppet Show was on television. And I grew up listening to the Great Muppet Caper, not the Muppet Caper, but the Muppet Movie album, which had what I consider to be one of the best songs of all time, The Rainbow Connection. So I grew up listening to Rainbow Connection, and then when I was very, very young, the Muppet Christmas Carol came out. And since that moment, and God bless Sir Michael Caine, oh my God, ever since that movie has come out, every single year on Christmas Eve or Christmas, depending, we watch that movie. And it has become such an intrinsic part of our life that I pretty much quote the Muppets daily.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Adam, how about you? How did you get started with the Muppets?
Well, I always watched the Muppets. I can't remember a time where I didn't watch the Muppets. You know, the Muppets went off the air just a little bit after I was born, but I watched the movies, obviously, like so many people did. And when I was younger, I really loved all the old repeats, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, as you rewatch something as an adult, it does change over a period of time.
Yeah.
And that's understandable. Now, I guess I have another question before we really get into this. And that is, okay, first I should say that I actually saw The Muppet Show when it was around. I was in my 20s, actually, or late teens into early 20s. So I loved it. I loved the original show, and I watched everything I could. I didn't see all of it at that point in time, but I saw the first three seasons for sure. But my next question is, if you have a favorite Muppet, who is it? So, Adam, we'll start with you. You have a favorite Muppet?
You know, when I was younger, it was probably Gonzo. I always thought Gonzo was cool. And, you know, people like to say Kermit, but... You know, I'm going to have to say, and this is going to sound odd for some people, but I have to give Miss Piggy her due. She's fucking awesome.
Yes, she is. Absolutely.
She's loyal. She is good at what she does. She might be a little selfish sometimes, but, you know, that makes her a little more relatable.
Yeah, agreed. How about you, Rach?
Okay, well, for me, I do have a small affinity for Miss Piggy, and that is only because weird reasons that I love the Muppets. My mother, her name is Peggy, and she was... live and a teenager when the Muppets were originally happening. And so one of the nicknames that she got christened with was Miss Piggy. Although she was a very, very, like, she's 5'3" and probably weighed like 100 pounds in high school. Like, she wasn't a piggly woman, but she... decided to accept her nickname, and that's why I started watching the Muppets, is when I was younger and she was telling me about that. My favorite Muppet, I do love some Miss Piggy, don't get me wrong, but I have to say that when I was coming up, when I was younger, like at 3-4 years old, some of my first memories are of my first imaginary friend, Gonzo. Gonzo the Great was my first imaginary friend.
Nice. Well, I'm also on Team Gonzo. Gonzo has been my favorite for years. Love Gonzo.
Yep.
So
I mean, how can you not?
Gonzo's fucking amazing.
Yes, he is. And I just love it that he's just so out there with his art. And that sort of thing, and nobody really, you know, cares. It's okay to be that way, and I think that's a great thing about
Let me tell you guys from personal experience, because I know this motherfucker. Like, I mean, obviously, we were besties. He is so creative with his explosions and his chickens.
Yes. Yes, this is true. So when we look at the show itself, okay, we have different types of guests. Okay? We've got singers. We've got comedians. We have actors. We have even old vaudevillians, that sort of thing. If you take a look at the type of guest they would have, which type of guest do you think worked best with the Muppets in that context on the show?
Honestly,
this
is going to be a really unpopular opinion. I really felt like a lot of the guests took away from the Muppets.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, like, yay, it's fun, and it's like this kind of, you know, quirky SNL vibe you've got going on, but the Muppets were the hilarity. It wasn't the people that were there interacting with them as though they didn't realize that they weren't actually, you know, real, you know, working people. Blah. You do that joke once and it's done. The Muppets themselves were what was so funny. And that's why, honestly, like, I know Steve Martin, Gilda Radner, all of them. All of them were on the Muppet Show. Like, some of the greats, some of the people that I will, like, die on the hill defending being the best in their craft. But they did not contribute as much to the show as they really should have or could have.
Well, I think that's part of that is... I think part of that is because they didn't feel comfortable. You could see this uncomfortableness. And why I said, you know, the actors, comedians, and that sort of thing was that I felt that most of the singers and dancers and entertainers had no clue about how to interact. I watched the first episode with Julia Prowse, and it was like, why is she even there? Because Adam, I know you have some thoughts on this particular subject, so please go ahead.
Yeah, like I said, I loved the Muppets when I was younger. Maybe it's just that my tastes have changed. Maybe it was the audience I was watching it with also wasn't enjoying it that much. I don't know, but I had a very negative response when I came back to the show recently. And, you know, it could be that it's just who was there as a guest, but I don't know.
Well, you say it was negative. Why was it negative? Be more specific.
Well, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it. It just really didn't work, and I don't know what it was, if it was something where it was just so rooted in the time or what, but it's really, really bizarre. I mean, hell, I've been thinking about it since yesterday, trying to put my head around exactly what it was that irked me the most. And I honestly can't come up with just one thing. It's very widespread. I think part of it, I actually right now just came up with one thing. I think one thing is that I got used as I grew up to some of the later designs for the characters from the movies, and I'd forgotten that even though, say, in the case of Miss Piggy and Gonzo, season 2 onward, they changed the way they looked, that season 1 in particular, that was very crude muppetry.
Yeah, it was.
And and just both in how they were performed, but also the way they looked. And that may have been part of what was put in there. But, you know, I just found myself kind of bored. The jokes weren't landing. It wasn't that I was really so much offended by anything. I mean, obviously there's some material that now, you know, we know better. Not that we didn't know better back then, but people didn't think to say much about it. You know, that's not the reason. The reason was just I found myself mostly, sadly, bored. And really, the characters on The Muppet Show aren't the characters that we've come to love in the movies. They seem like it, but they're not. I will say one thing. I had forgotten how sarcastic Kermit was, and I did appreciate Kermit's sarcasm.
Yes.
The Muppet Show version of Kermit is really sarcastic.
I mean, can I just say that I came here to say this? Like, I did try to watch The Muppet Show a few years ago, and that was the same thing as I love The Muppets. Like, I can tell you all about every single one of their movies, but when I tried to go back and watch the show and get some more of the references, it didn't land. Exactly what you said. It just doesn't land. Because it's very topical. Like, a lot of SNL stuff, if I show it to one of my kids today, they don't get it because it's not relevant anymore. And for the time, The Muppet Show was hilarious and very, very uproariously just out there. But now we're so... That's it. Is like it was out there for the time. I mean, seriously, they started from a frickin' coffee commercial.
Yeah. Now I want to talk a little bit because I did the deepest dive into the series. I mean, I went through seasons 4 and 5 completely. I watched every one of them.
Holy shit!
Then I went back. Now, one of the things I noticed in season 1, the opening is different, right?
Yep.
It's lesser Muppets. Yep. They're not covering the whole theater. If you take a look at that, and I don't know if either one of you saw in episode 1, the two Muppets on the farthest sides are mechanical. They're not even operated by hand.
I did actually notice that, by the way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Hold on. So
yeah.
Let's be honest about this. It's the first season. Generally, first seasons, you got to get your feet on the ground. And therefore, I think the first season is the weakest. Okay? It's not until the second season where you start to get people who get it. And there are certain... When I first asked the question... You know, the actors, the comedians, and so on and so on. There are certain types of comedians that worked. Milton Berle was not one of them.
Oh,
but
God. Jerome
was. Peter Ustinov was. And particularly Peter Sellers. And the reason for that, I think, is that they embraced the insanity.
Yes.
Okay, and it's those people that I think got it. And there are specific episodes, I think, that are some of the best television ever. And I think that Peter Sellers is one of them. I think that is absolutely a brilliant, brilliant episode. But it's because it's Peter Sellers. Another one that's in the first season that is by far the best of the first season is Vincent Price. Because Vincent gets it. You know, I mean, Vincent worked with all sorts of you know,
weird ears.
Monsters,
I mean, Vincent,
and that sort of thing, plastic monsters. He gets it.
Vincent Price was besties with Ed Wood. I mean, like, seriously, he gets weird.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing about, I think that the show really depends on the guest star. And as I was going through it, I was seeing, you know, certain guest stars that really got it and certain guest stars that had no business being there. So if you remember any specific episodes, and I'll start with Adam on this since you did a little bit of dive, is there a particular guest star that you think was absolutely terrible?
I don't know if the guest star was terrible or if it was just the material, but the Elkie Summer episode was pretty fucking terrible. And the material they had, that was awful. The Sandy Duncan stuff, I guess it was cute enough, but you know, I saw the Spike Milligan episode. Now Spike Milligan is a little too zany for my tastes typically, but it was really interesting to see what he managed to do with the material, because you know he's going 25 million miles a minute and no one could keep up with him, and that was fascinating to watch, but.
Well, we'll get to Spike here in a minute when I talk about Spike. But go ahead.
The show just, like I said, I watched 3 or 4 episodes yesterday. I watched a couple the other day, and it just it ended up being just a massive disappointment in terms of a revisit. And I think that's a damn shame, really, but. It is what it is for me.
And what about you? I don't know if you got a chance to see any of the episodes recently, Rachel, but do you remember a guest star that you didn't like? Or?
I don't remember a guest star that I didn't like. And like I said, it has been a few years since I've seen the show, but I did watch it within at least the past 5 years, so it wasn't. I'm kind of with Adam on this. It's not that it was like I didn't like the guest stars. It's not that I didn't like some of the skits. It just nothing really landed with me. It was bland. It was super bland, especially compared to the movies, because I will die on the hill of the Muppet movies are some of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. They are so hilarious that I have literally hurt myself from laughing. Actually, my favorite t-shirt, we call it my angry shirt, it's a cubist drawing of Statler and Waldorf, and on the bottom it says, "Haters gonna hate." I mean, like, how is that not the best t-shirt ever? And it's my favorite. It's a Muppet Show reference, and if you've ever seen the Muppet Show and you see those two white-haired old dudes, even in cubism, like, you know who they are, and you know they are the motherfucking haters, okay? They are the haters. So,
they're the original haters.
And I just wanted, before I cut off here, I just want to let everybody know my one weird piece of Muppet trivia. I am a trivia brain. I actually placed 3rd in the state last year in trivia, yay, with our team. So my one weird piece of Muppet trivia is that the two old dudes, the spectators, their names are Statler and Waldorf. which are both very fancy-ass hotels. Now, the one time Waldorf was not in the show, a Muppet that was very obviously Waldorf in drag showed up to replace him, and it was supposedly his wife, Astoria, the Waldorf Astoria Hotels.
Yes.
And
see,
so
now that's
Astoria,
cute.
So it's you might have even seen it in your viewing of the Muppet Show, but yeah, Astoria is Waldorf's wife, and if you like adult world reality deep dive into it, obviously Astoria is Waldorf and drag, but it's that like made my life when I figured that out.
Nice. For me, I want to focus in on the guests, because
yep.
I really think the ones that got it are the ones that understood the insanity that was around them. And I mentioned some. I mentioned Peter Ustinov. I mentioned Cyril Mostel. And they all sort of in the same league, Peter Sellers. But you mentioned Spike Milligan. And if there is a show that I think is the best of the Muppet Show, it is the Spike Milligan episode. And I give this opinion specifically not only for myself, but for a friend of the show's, Bill Reynolds. And Bill's been on many times with us. But both Bill and I agree. And there are numerous stories about Milligan. And I particularly like one. Now, Milligan, Peter Sellers was on the show and suggested that they bring Spike Milligan on. So they booked Spike Milligan. Spike comes in about a week or so for prep before the show and writes certain episodes. So he wrote whatever he did, if you want to call that writing, who knows. But they set it up in a very, very loose sense. So the puppeteers didn't really know what he was going to do at that particular time. And it is the only time in the history of the Muppets where they couldn't control the guest. And there is there's this weird thing with Lou Zealand that he does, where they literally throw Muppets at him because they don't know what the hell's fuck to do. And it is beautiful. It is it's chaotic. It is so out there. And that also brings up another thing, and we sort of mentioned it. They now have disclaimers. They have disclaimers on the Muppet Show on Disney Plus, because there are stereotypical representations of ethnicities. So you have, you know, the rickshaw Chinese and so on and so forth.
I have to say on that note that one of my favorite things ever, and it makes me so happy because it reminds me of the Muppet Show and the Muppet movies that I watched when I was a kid, and the fact that we had a cartoon when I was growing up. It was the Muppet Babies. I have been inundated with the Muppets my entire life, and I freaking love them. So a lot of times when I'm making, like, some extravagant, weird food, I quote the Swedish Chef. And obviously it's all gibberish, but, you know, I remember his lines from the Muppet Christmas Carol. And when I'm, like, tossing a salad or doing something else, you know, I'll be like, Indy Verdi, Verdi, Verdscare, you know. Because that's what he's saying in the Muppet Christmas Carol. So it's... I can understand how that would be a problem now, because that's, I mean, frankly, I'm going to call myself out here, but that's like ingrained racism. Like anytime
I want to step in here. I think what we have to do is look at context, look at time frame, look at all these type of things. And I think we're in a particular time where there's too much outrage. Now, this is my own personal opinion. Let me finish. You got Spike Milligan, and the big thing about the whole show is that they have 110 different ethnicities that they're celebrating everything. So you have... So you take a look at the visuals, right? And how are you going to visualize certain ethnic groups? You know, the Germans have the beer hats and so on and so forth, and that, and so on and so forth. But they do all the stereotypical things so you can notice who they are and understand some of the jokes. The whole setup is at the end of the show. They end up with one of the worst songs ever produced for Disney, and that would be It's a Small, Small World. And they have Spike Milligan going off while doing this. And it's brilliant TV. And I think we have to take a look and step back and understand what they were trying to do. And I think we go a little overboard in terms of this reaction.
Agree with you.
And I think we should give some things a pass. The problem with this disclaimer is that these particular episodes that have this disclaimer are not available to children unless there's an adult there. Everything else is. But kids 7 years and under, they don't even understand, I think, to a certain degree, what really the disclaimer is about. It's just supposed to be fun.
That's my thing is, frankly, I'm going to throw this out there. As the only person, mother, not the only person in our podcast legion that has children, but I understand that. And I watch a lot of weird stuff. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and, you know, part of my job is watching things for this podcast, frankly. And so my children see some really weird stuff, and I don't believe in sheltering them necessarily. Like, there's certain things I'm not going to show them. Like, I am definitely not going to show my kid, my 11, almost 12-year-old child, I'm not going to show them the skin I live in. But if I'm watching it and they walk through the room and have a question about what they just saw, I'm not going to shield them from it. So it's really funny that things like The Muppet Show have a disclaimer now, because until about a week or so ago, I had Disney Plus. I have to pay for my subscription again. Sorry, guys. So my eldest child would read these disclaimers on things and be like, why is it saying this is bad for me to watch? Like,
Yeah.
And I had to explain that it's not, because you, as a sapient human being in the modern times, know that it's not correct to do that. But also, you know, that back then we didn't have these rules, and that's why they thought it was funny.
Right. Okay, so I'm gonna cut you off there, and I want to just drop that Adam and see what he says, what he thinks about the disclaimer situation.
You know, I understand why they're doing it. I have mixed feelings on it. You know, I think that in our present climate, it is the right thing to do. I do think that sometimes people do need to understand things in historical context. But I also think that sometimes these disclaimers take out the aspect of, I'm sorry, but people should know a little bit of what they're going to see before they go to see it. And when you watch something that's a little older, you should be prepared for potentially what might be referred to these days as problematic material. You know, when I saw Birth of a Nation when I was much younger, I already knew that film had a reputation for being racist. Same thing for when I saw Song of the South, when it had its last theatrical premiere, or last theatrical run back in the early to mid 80s. Same thing when I first saw Gone with the Wind.
Also a Disney film, by the way.
Yep, yep. And, you know, I saw these in part because even as a very young child, I was curious what the fuss was about. And I think that, now I do think that it's important to understand things again in context. I think that it's important to, you know that these are not positive depictions. Do I think that we should perpetuate these depictions? No. And watching those for entertainment, I do understand how that hurts groups, but do I think that they should not be available for study? No. But do I think that we should look at racist and otherwise bigoted or harmful stereotypes as entertainment? Absolutely not. And in that sense, I think that the disclaimers do serve a certain purpose, but also has to do with how the audience itself receives those disclaimers.
Okay, I can see that. I'm not really against the disclaimers. I just think that there's a sense of we go a little overboard in all this. We don't look at context. I think context is really important. And in the context of the Muppets, hold on. So even if you go back to the Wilkins ads, right? And if anyone wants to check them, just go out on
Carl,
YouTube.
Carl, I need to interrupt you here. Having said that, I'm going to have to make an early exit from the show, but it's been great, guys, and I need to get going.
Okay, fair enough, Adam. I knew that you were had limited time, and I really appreciate you coming on. So take care of yourself. Let's give him a hand. Yay, Adam.
Bye.
We'll
do this
again. Bye.
So I just think that we look at these things and we have to really look at context, and we have to look at the time frame, and we have to understand sometimes, you know, like during wartime films and how the Japanese are depicted from the American point of view. We were at war with them. Of course it's not going to be. It's going to be a detrimental. And we have to take a look at those things and sort of understand the time frame. And the 70s were much more freer. I mean, on Saturday Night Live, they had one of their most famous routines had the N-word in it. And it was written by Richard Pryor and I can't think of the guy's name, his main guy, writer friend. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have to take a look at those things and understand, you know, where we were as a culture at that particular time. So I'm going to now change subjects, okay? So I was going to ask Adam before he left, but we'll certainly go with you. But I'm going to start this. If we take a look at the films and everything past the Muppet Show, we see... You know, we see this development of character. We see the different films and that sort of thing. Now, knowing me and something I said earlier, and I was about to tell you this when we were talking, then your phone died earlier today. I have a favorite Muppet movie. What movie do you think is my favorite Muppet movie?
Muppets in Space.
Absolutely. Fucking-lutely.
Oh, my God, I totally got it.
I love that movie. And it is by far considered the weakest of the films. And yet I think it's brilliant.
Weirdly enough, did you see, like, no hesitation on that? I knew.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Team Gonzo to begin with, and to have a film that specifically focuses on him. And I think it had one of the best human co-stars ever, and that would be Jeffrey Tambor, who plays the guy that's after Gonzo. And the bear and everybody. I just love that. And then at the end, it's all about real family. And he decides to stay. And actually, I love that movie. It is by far my favorite Muppet movie. Now, I have a couple other little nuggets, but I know you have a nugget you want to talk about. Because you've done some Muppeteering, have you not? Hello? Oh, goodness gracious. It looks like we may have lost her. Hold on just a second, folks. Are you back?
Yeah, I think you might have muted me.
No. Hello? No. I don't know why that happened. Can you hear me?
Well, yes. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, absolutely. I don't know what happened. It just did it on its own. And unfortunately, I'm producing so the phone. Hold on. The phone is in one place, and the computer is in the other because I have to hook it up directly to the internet, so it's a pain in the ass. But it's okay.
What the fuck is wrong with you, Shirley?
I don't know. Stop calling me Shirley. I was just about to pass it to you because we have some little final things to say. And one thing that I do know is that you've done some Muppeteering in your day.
Yes. And before I got cut off, I don't know what you guys heard, but my last reaction before the phone did its crazy business was, oh my God, you're calling me out on the Muppeteering. Jesus Christ. So for anybody who doesn't know, hopefully there's not like a whole bunch of people listening to this show, because I am about to reveal some real good info. I am a former semi-professional Muppeteer. And there is a really big, big difference between Muppeteering and puppeteering. And I'm just going to say it's all in the handwork. And, well, I mean, with Muppets, you stick your hand up the butt and use your hand to operate the mouth. So there's also the distinction of, when you're Muppeteering, you have the wires that control the arms, they're not wires, they're basically like big sticks that you use to make the hands move back and forth and such. And so I have a particular affinity for Muppet movies because I know what those people are doing down there.
Very cool. Very cool. As I said before, this episode is dedicated to Ed Medina, and Ed actually worked on some of the puppets and was part of the Muppets, yes, sorry. But he worked on getting them all together, not design, but just getting the felt and getting all that together and putting them together. And he worked specifically and knew Jim Henson. So unfortunately, as I said before, he was unable to join us. Now, for me, I have a little bit of a little thing that I need to say. One of the things that I love about the Muppets, and we, of course, started the show with it, is the theme song. The theme song
all
is
of their
by...
songs.
Yes, but the theme song specifically is by a composer by the name of Sam Pottle. Sam Pottle was an educator in New York City. And he also wrote choral music. He did a couple of off-Broadway shows. One of them I actually was called Money, and I was the musical director of that for a community group in Bracket, Pennsylvania, and that was written by Sam Pottle. Well, when I moved to New York, he was one of my customers at Carl Fisher, and so I got to know him not well, but I knew who he was. And then I remember having one conversation about the Muppet theme and how that happened. And that basically happened because he knew Henson. You know, and he wrote this little song that he thought would be good, and they bought it from him. So I got to meet the composer of the Muppet Show theme. That's pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, working at Carl Fisher, I got to meet a lot of people, a lot of great musicians, classical musicians, and some jazz musicians, and so on and so forth. My biggest person that I ever waited on was Joe Jackson, and I waited on him for over an hour, which was really cool. But yes, very cool. So I didn't ask you, Rachel, what is your favorite? Now, you talked about the Muppet Christmas Carol, but of the theatrical ones, you know, which would be the Muppet movie and Manhattan and so on and so forth, which one of those do you like the most?
Only because I have so many childhood memories of it. I'm not saying that it's the best one. I'm saying that it's my favorite. And I'm sure you guys can probably guess because I have misnamed a bunch of stuff this evening as the Great Muppet Caper.
Yeah, that's a very good one.
I mean, it's got freaking John Cleese in it and Monty Python, another thing I was raised up on, just like the Muppets. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's great. And it has Miss Piggy, which is the kind of underdog favorite of everybody. It has her being, you know, at the top of her game, hitting rock bottom, and back at the top of her game again. And I really respect that. Like, that is a Miss Piggy movie.
By the way, I didn't mention this when we were talking about the episodes, but John Cleese has an episode, and he's very, very good in it. And the English, yes, I think the English comedians worked really well with the Muppets, particularly the ones that were supposed to. Go ahead.
No, I just said they do. I agree with you. Like I watch a lot, and I mean a really embarrassing amount of British television. I don't have any of the apps for it, but anytime a British or Canadian television comedy comes up, I'm like on that shit. They really do seem to work better with props than we do in American comedy. And by props, I mean things like Muppets or a box of eggs. I mean, Eggs Box 360. Talk to me about that later.
But, okay, so any final thoughts in terms of your thoughts on the Muppets, not just the Muppet Show, but the Muppets themselves? And what influence did they have on you growing up?
Honestly, the Muppets had such a major influence on me growing up, because I did grow up in a time that, yes, the Muppet Show was on reruns, but I grew up when they started making Muppet movies, and those are quintessential to my being. I mean, literally, I told you, my parents and I watched the Muppet Christmas Carol every year on Christmas. And we can all quote, like, every single line forwards and backwards. They were so essential. And not just to me at 35, but my, you know, mother, who's almost in their 70s. Like, they were quintessential to her. So, like, the Muppets were so prominent that they've spanned multiple decades.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
Even my kids love the Muppets. My kids. I'm 35. I have two kids. And you know, one of them is just now becoming an adolescent teenager, and one of them is just now becoming an actual toddler. And they both love the Muppets. If I showed them the show, they wouldn't get a single bit of it. But the movie...
I still think they'd be entertained, though. I think they'd still be entertained. One of the things that we really have not mentioned that at least deserves a mention is Sesame Street. I was too old. By the time Sesame Street came on in 69, I was 11 years old. So I wasn't the demographic, but those people that were early Gen Xers certainly grew up. And the thing is, you know, we haven't really focused on Sesame Street in terms of, or the Muppets in terms of, you know, teaching us certain things. You know, I mean Sesame Street with the alphabet and just human nature and all this that happened within those contexts. And Henson was a major, major part of that. And the Muppets were a major part of that. And so, you know, let's not forget that whole part of the Muppets.
Can we? Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I just yelled at my dog, guys.
That's okay. You're allowed to yell at your dog. So the other thing I just want to mention, too, is if you're interested, our listeners, I would suggest very strongly to go to YouTube and put in Jim Henson movies, or short films, actually, is the way to do it. Jim Henson did a bunch of short films in the late 60s and early 70s that were way out there, very experimental, and very subversive. And that shows you, you know, how multifaceted this man was. He had ideas for things. Let's not forget things like Labyrinth or The Dark Crystal, which were incredible, dark.
And Ninja Turtles, by the way.
And Ninja Turtles. Absolutely. You know, or The Storyteller, which is one of my favorite shows. Storyteller is great. It's old folk tales. But I suggest that if you like The Muppet Show and you love The Muppets, check out everything Jim Henson has ever done.
Check out all the stuff that his son has done posthumously. Like, after Jim Henson died, I think his name is Frank.
Brian Henson.
He has really tried to live up to his father's legacy and done a lot of great stuff with Muppets. I just want to say that.
Well, one thing, that sort of brings up something else. I had a major disappointment about 4 years ago, and it's unfortunate. But right before Henson died, he had notes on a movie that he wanted to do. And the movie was called The Happy Land Murders. Now, years later, they finally did make it, but not to Jim Henson's specifications. And Brian tried really hard. Hold on. Brian really tried to do it to the way that his dad wanted to do it, but he couldn't get the funding. And finally, when he got the funding, they made it into this really weird comedy, whereas it was supposed to be a real noir. It was supposed to be a real honest-to-God noir. And I was disappointed in the final product. That being said, it's still really interesting, and it's a shame that it didn't come to Jim Henson's ideas. His work, pre-production work and his storyboards on that were just friggin' amazing. Seriously.
See, and I
so
just,
go ahead.
I
you were about to say
that.
Something.
Well,
yeah.
I actually, the only thing I said earlier, I just corrected you on the name. The movie, I don't know what everything else is called, but the movie was called The Happy Time Murders.
The Happy Land Murders. It was originally The Happy Land Murders.
Yes. Now it's Happy Town. And I have actually suggested that a few times on the ISF board because I did not realize that was originally a Henson thing. Realize, like I saw that completely blind. So I freaking love that movie. That movie is hilarious. But I'm probably going to have to watch it again after, you know, learning all of this wonderful information and see how I feel about it because,
well, you know, to me, like that 5 minute sex scene is just way fucking overboard. And they made things way too overboard for that. You know,
any sex scene in a movie for me is overboard because I just really don't care. Like, you can just imply that you had sex. We don't have to see it. If we want to watch you having sex, we'll get on the dark web and watch porn. But so for me, like,
you know,
or
at least meet the people. But yeah.
Well,
but
you don't have to get on the dark web to watch Meet the People.
Yeah. The original idea of that, though, it was supposed to be a real noir. It was supposed to be set in the 40s in this universe where Muppets and humans coexist. And it was supposed to be gangster, and it was supposed to be, you know, there was a bit of Double Indemnity in it, I guess, the idea. And so, yeah, I mean, I was disappointed because I was really looking forward to that. I really wanted to see what Brian did with that. And unfortunately, if you read a lot of the interviews and that sort of thing afterwards and beforehand, Brian basically disavowed himself of it. He said it wasn't what we wanted to do.
And see, so. I did not know any of that, and that probably would have tainted my watching of that movie. So I am still, like, on the ISF board and stuff, going to maintain my opinion that the movie itself, like, as just a movie, was good, which I do with a lot of things, like with books and such, that I don't like the movie as much as I like the book, but it's like, hey, if you watch the movie and you don't know anything about how amazing the book was, it's a good movie.
Yeah, well, so, you know what? I will say this about that, Happy Time Murders, is that it was better than I expected after I knew all that information. It was better than I expected. Still wasn't great.
Well,
but it was better than
I mean, Melissa McCarthy, as much of a, you know, doob as she can be in some movies, she's actually a pretty fantastic comedian. And
no,
if
I
you
like
put her.
Her
in, if you put her in the right scenario, like Happy Town Murders and all that, she really just, like, shines. She thrives. And I laughed my dick off in that movie mostly because of her.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, there's
some
good stuff in there. I'll give you that. But yeah, anyway, we're gonna end up here. And we're going to end up with a song. Now, most people might think of Kermit singing It's Not Easy Being Green,
Rainbow
or the
Connection.
Rainbow Connection. But no, I'm going to end up with a song which, to me, epitomizes the Muppets. And for those of you that don't know, well, I'll explain this in a second after we do House Cleaning. So House Cleaning, on Sunday, we're going to do a show, and our guest will be Jefferson Richard, on In Memoriam to Yaphet Kotto. So Jefferson knew Yaphet quite well, and he's going to share some stories. On Tuesday, we are going to have a bunch of Rondo Award nominees, including Troy Howarth and Joey Mantello and a number of people on there. Rondos are given out each
one
year.
Didn't one of our people get nominated for a Rondo this year, but they decided not to accept the nomination?
Yes, we'll be talking about that on the show.
Awesome.
But he'll be calling in. Also, Sam Irvin, who's a... Sam Irvin is also going to be joining us, and Sam's a good friend of the show, and so is Joey Mento. So that
I
will be on
Sam.
Tuesday. Yes, I know you do.
Ah.
And then on Wednesday, we are going into Spaghetti Western Land with good friend and author of the Three Spaghetti Western Digest, Mike House. And I love Mike.
Nice.
Mike is awesome. And we're going to focus in on incredibly strange spaghetti westerns is what we're going to do. So that ought to be a lot of fun. And
Does my favorite song ever count for that one because of the music video?
Yes. Yes, we talked about
yes!
that. That's going to be...
Yes.
And talking about songs... We're going to end up with a song that, to me, epitomizes the Muppets And what's even better is that it's actually written for a 1964 Italian Mondo movie. And
a coffee commercial.
Yeah, and a coffee commercial, too. They use it for a coffee commercial. And, of course, Miss Rachel, you know what that song is, don't you? What is that song?
Mano, mano.
There we go. Here we go.
Phenomena. Phenomena. Phenomena.
Favorite skits, and really weird, and that's the beauty of the Muppet Show. So for Rachel and myself, mana mana, keep going. Mana mana.
Good night, folks.
Mana mana, and good night, people. Good night.